Hey, this is Nate Bright, co-producer of this year's CFNC Live Sessions and release rating reels on Instagram. Do you love local music and supporting local arts? CFNC's annual funding drive is running until December 31st, and your gift is needed to help us provide local musicians with modern top-of-the-line equipment, space, and technical support to better showcase their creativity on our airwaves all year round. Help us raise $25,000 this year. Make your gift today via cfnc.ca.
Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Ellie MacArthur. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. Council has voted unanimously to review Kingston's property standards bylaws. Responding to a steady stream of complaints from residents about troubling and sometimes messy neighbor disputes. The motion, brought forward by Councillor Jimmy Hassan, directs city staff to report back to council on opportunities to improve public awareness and understanding of the city's bylaws and potential refinements to existing bylaws to enhance property standards requirements.
I will make it simple and easy and clear. The motions it's I want to bring forward to help those in our community, in our city, who has a small issues with their neighbors. Over 3 years, I have heard a lot complaints from my district resident about those issues. And we have required the help from the bylaws and sometime with the police too. And I came to learn that is so many small things which bylaw or the police cannot resolve because of we don't have enough forcing bylaws for those issues. But I just want to ask my colleagues to support this motion to just allow the staff to look at what else we can look into deeply to these bylaws, which we can make more usable and have a little bit more power delegated to our bylaw to resolve those issues between to the neighbors before instead of going to the courts and, you know, just making a good neighborhood with each other and behaving with each other and taking care of our responsibility as a responsible citizen and a responsible resident of Kingston instead just poking each other and, you know, making uncomfortable their neighbors.
Other councillors confirmed they hear these complaints too. Garbage left out, feeding wildlife, unkempt yards, and other conditions that spill over onto neighboring properties. A clarification came from Councillor Brandon Tozzo, who seconded the motion, stressing that the city will not be pulled into just any dispute.
I think as councillors, we often get criticisms of people who just don't like their neighbor and they want to sick the city on them. I think we're all pretty familiar with that. Yes, I'm just seeing some heads nodding. So to be very clear to the community for expectations, if your neighbor is like, you know, has a house that's falling apart and causing a whole bunch of rats going there, and objectively, this is terrible, we're going to get involved. If you don't like your neighbor, we're not going to get... That's not our job.
In his closing remarks, Councillor Hassan underscored that the motion aims to encourage good neighbor behavior and provide clarity on property standards bylaws.
And I hope the staff will look into, no matter what is in municipal jurisdictions, and bring those changes to the bylaw and give a little bit more power to our bylaw enforcement team to resolve those issues, whether just talking to them or take other measures in place.
With the motion passing unanimously, staff will report back in Q2 2026 with information and recommendations on public education strategies, existing bylaws, and enforcement options. Council has voted unanimously to review Kingston's property standards bylaws, responding to a steady stream of complaints from residents about troubling and sometimes messy neighbor disputes. The motion, brought forward by Councillor Jimmy Hassan, directs city staff to report back to council on opportunities to improve public awareness and understanding of the city's bylaws and potential refinements to existing bylaws to enhance property standards requirements.
I will make it simple and easy and clear. The motions it's I want to bring forward to help those in our community, in our city, who has a small issues with their neighbors. Over 3 years, I have heard a lot complaints from my district resident about those issues. And we have required the help from the bylaws and sometime with the police too. And I came to learn that is so many small things which bylaw or the police cannot resolve because of we don't have enough forcing bylaws for those issues. But I just want to ask my colleagues to support this motion to just allow the staff to look at what else we can look into deeply to these bylaws, which we can make more usable and have a little bit more power delegated to our bylaw to resolve those issues between to the neighbors before instead of going to the courts and, you know, just making a good neighborhood with each other and behaving with each other and taking care of our responsibility as a responsible citizen and a responsible resident of Kingston, instead just poking each other and, you know, making uncomfortable their neighbors.
Other councillors confirmed they hear these complaints too. Garbage left out, feeding wildlife, unkempt yards, and other conditions that spill over onto neighboring properties. A clarification came from Councillor Brandon Tozzo, who seconded the motion, stressing that the city will not be pulled into just any dispute.
I think as councillors, we often get criticisms of people who just don't like their neighbor and they want to sick the city on them. I think we're all pretty familiar with that. Yes, I'm just seeing some heads nodding. So to be very clear to the community for expectations, if your neighbor is like, you know, has a house that's falling apart and causing a whole bunch of rats going there, and objectively, this is terrible, we're going to get involved. If you don't like your neighbor, we're not going to get... That's not our job.
In his closing remarks, Councillor Hassan underscored that the motion aims to encourage good neighbor behavior and provide clarity on property standards bylaws.
And I hope the staff will look into, no matter what is in municipal jurisdictions, and bring those changes to the bylaw and give a little bit more power to our bylaw enforcement team to resolve those issues, whether just talking to them or take other measures in place.
With the motion passing unanimously, staff will report back in Q2 2026 with information and recommendations on public education strategies, existing bylaws, and enforcement options. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Hello, this is Henry Walker with your Queens Campus Beat. That's Queens Campus News here on CFRC 101.9. First off, rising living costs are placing pressure on students at Queens. According to the 2024-2025 Student Affairs Annual Report, thousands of meals were provided through initiatives such as Swipe It Forward, the Peach Market, and community-based meal programs. This academic year saw a significant jump, with over 6,000 meals via Swipe, plus nearly 770 students receiving support from Student Wellness Services. In response, the student-run food bank saw its fee rise from $4 to $5.50. The funds are slated to help offset the rising cost of groceries and potentially allow expansion of hours and offerings, including more diverse and culturally inclusive options. This increase is part of a broader recognition from university support services. Food insecurity is real, and demand on campus is rising. Queens has unveiled a new 10-year plan, the Teaching and Learning Space Framework, which aims to reshape classrooms across campus to be more inclusive, accessible, and conductive to collaborative learning. The framework builds on existing efforts. For instance, some newer or renovated rooms already use universal design principles, flexible layouts, and breakout-friendly arrangements. Over time, students could see upgrades to outdated lecture halls, new furniture or room configurations, and more emphasis on accessibility, equity, and pedagogical flexibility. University leadership says the goal is to reduce barriers, to thoughtfully teach, and to embed values of sustainability, accessibility, and academic excellence into physical learning spaces. In a recent move to address safety and vandalism concerns, Queens has installed more than 700 security cameras across residence buildings over the past year. The expansion began in 2023 and now covers most residence buildings, with cameras placed in common and high traffic areas such as hallways, stairwells, entrances, and elevators, but not in student private rooms. According to the university, this measure has contributed to a significant drop in vandalism and malicious fire alarm incidents. At the same time, some students are raising questions about the balance between increased security and personal privacy. One former resident expressed concern that while cameras may defer misconduct in hallways, they do little to address problems inside bedrooms or private spaces. As a cold, dark, and dreary winter approaches, campus has brightened up the exterior south wall of the Athletics and Recreation Center, the ARC. This has been transformed with a new mural titled We Slash News, created by Montreal-based artist Anna Jane McIntyre. The artwork features diverse cultural figures and proudly incorporates 2SLGBTQ+ pride flags, a symbolic nod to inclusivity, identity, and community solidarity. Many students say the mural improves their daily campus experience, offering a moment of brightness and reflection as they pass by. One first-year student described it as a bit of joyous color therapy, especially welcome during gloomy winter days. I've been Henry Walker, bringing you your Queen's Campus Beat here on CFRC 101.9.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Beginning with Monday, December 1st, it's going to be a chilly day here in the city of Kingston. High of -4, overnight low of -7. And as we move into the overnight hours, moving towards Tuesday, December 2nd, there is a 60% chance of snow for the Kingston region, accumulation between 2 to 4 centimeters. So keep that in mind, especially if you are out and about on Tuesday morning or afternoon. Wednesday, December 3rd, going to warm up slightly, a high right at freezing at 0 with an overnight low of -4. Thursday, December 4th, daytime high of -1, but a bone-chilling low of -12. It's going to be sunny, but it is going to be very cold with high wind chill. Friday, December 5th, daytime high of -5 with a 60% chance of snow throughout the day, going to feel like -11 with the wind chill. Saturday, December 6th, daytime high of -2, overnight low of -10 with periods of snow throughout the day. Sunday, December 7th, daytime high of -3, feeling closer to 0, so a little warmer than the days before it. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, December 8th, a mix of sleet and freezing rain on the morning of December 8th, high of -4, low of -7, so it's going to be chilly and there is going to be precipitation. Might be worthwhile doing a school bus watch. Keep your eye on the tri board for any announcements of bus cancellations. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. As a reminder, winter parking restrictions are in effect as of December 1st. During December and March, overnight on-street parking will be banned only if the weather and conditions require it. During January and February, however, overnight on-street parking will not be permitted, no matter the weather conditions. So once again, these restrictions go in effect December 1st and will last until April 1st. Here are some relevant road closures for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. And Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, San Beta Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Ellie MacArthur, a CFRC intern from the Queen's Department of History, and this is your concerts calendar for the week of December 1st to 7th. Ease into the week with the Jazz Society Jam at the RCHA starting at 4:30 p.m. It's a classic Kingston atmosphere and a cozy vibe. And if you're looking for something later, live jazz at Musiki starts at 8 p.m. and is always an intimate treat. Also on Monday, it's Kentucky at the Cove Inn starting at 5 p.m. On Tuesday, December 2nd, Tom's Tuesday Afternoon Happy Hour Jam takes place at the RCHA from 4 to 7 p.m. There is John McClurg, a Kingston favorite, at the Cove Inn starting at 5 p.m. And the Jersey Nights Before Christmas show at Kingston Grand Theater starts at 7:30 p.m. If you're feeling outgoing this Tuesday, as always, open mic with Carrick McAllister is at Jersey Sports Bar starting at 7 p.m. On Wednesday, Christmas with the Ennis Sisters is at the Spire and is a softer, folky East Coast charm with sweet harmonies, family stories, and lots of holiday glow, and this starts at 7:30 p.m. Also on Wednesday, the Blind Boys of Alabama take the Grand Theater stage at 7:30 p.m. This is a gospel history live in Kingston, so expect mind-blowing harmonies, storytelling, and an uplifting atmosphere. Over at Hotel Wolf Island, DJ Great White plays from 4 to 7 p.m., followed by their open mic starting at 7:30. These open mics are a great way to see Kingston's local talent, so be sure to check it out. On Thursday, it gets gritty at the Broom Factory with NQ Arbuckle. With an alternative country vibe, this night is sure to be one to remember starting at 7:30 p.m. Also on Thursday, a stacked lineup at the Mansion with Alana Sterling, Matt Bazinet, Nolan Hubbard, and Lucas Oak. The show starts at 9 p.m. and offers everything from acoustic pop to soulful vocals. Also on Thursday, at Something in the Water Brewing, Chris Koster plays at 8 p.m. and at the RCHA, it's the Jazz Society Christmas show starting at 7 p.m., mixing holiday cheer with local jazz. Lots going on Friday, December 5th, around Kingston at the Broom Factory. It's Zoo Station, bringing a full U2 Zoo TV experience starting at 8 p.m. At the Grand Theater, it's a Buble Christmas with vocalist Jay Davis starting at 7:30 p.m. At Hotel Wolf Island, a must-see is the Oscar Evans Group playing at 6:30, mixing jazz, soul, and modern groove. And at the Cove Inn, it's the Holiday Primer with the Plaid Bastards featuring Jeff Callery, Wade Foster, and Sean McCullough, starting at 6 p.m. Moving into the weekend, the vibes do not stop there. On Saturday, it's Tommy Youngstein at the Broom Factory, starting at 7:30 p.m., known for covers of Springsteen, Fleetwood Mac, and other classic rock, and it's always a great turnout. At Kingston Grand Theater, Danu brings world-class Irish traditional music to Kingston, and it's perfect for the holiday season. And at Tier 9 Og, it is the Celtic Kitchen Party at 9 p.m. And finally, closing out the week on Sunday, it's Jonathan Jones at Timeout Bar from 3 to 5:30 p.m. Candlelight Carol service at St. James Anglican Church at 4:30 p.m. Candlelight, Coldplay, and Imagine Dragons string quartet at the Spire starting at 8:30 p.m. Candlelight the Best of Hans Zimmer at the Spire at 6:30 p.m. Masterworks 3, Handel's Messiah at the Isabel Bader Center at 2:30 p.m. This is a Kingston holiday classic with stunning acoustics and a soaring choir. Finally, it's the Youth Open Mic at Le Sesame Theatre and Kim Pollard Live at the Loaf and Ale Pub starting at 5 p.m. Thanks so much for joining us this week. That was your concerts calendar for December 1st to 7th. If you have a concert that you'd like to add to our online or on-air calendar, reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Hey, how's it going? My name is Ellie MacArthur, a CFRC intern from the Queen's Department of History, and it's time for your events calendar for the week of December 1st to 7th. Starting off on Monday, December 1st, it's Christmas with Johnny Reed at Kingston Grand Theatre starting at 7:30 p.m. This is sure to be a big, emotional, and heartfelt holiday show. For something on the more calming side, it's A Quiet Christmas at the Spire starting at 6:30 p.m. And there's trivia at Brass Pub starting at 7:45 p.m. And trivia at Something in the Water Brewing starting at 8 p.m. Every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, it's Kingston Public Market in Springer Market Square from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. On Tuesday, there's also Community Song Circle at Kingston Community House from 6 to 8 p.m., Indigenous Drumming at Trellis HIV and Community Care Center starting at 1 p.m., Euchre at Daft Brewing starting at 7 p.m., and Jack's Tuesday Night Trivia at 7 p.m. as well. On Wednesday, you do not want to miss CFRC's Trivia Night at Something in the Water Brewing at 7 p.m., and you know what the first Wednesday of the month means. At the Grad Club, it's Open Stage Drag Show starting at 8 p.m. Busy night for trivia and karaoke also on Wednesday. It's trivia at Wild Wing starting at 7:30 p.m. Trivia at Daft Brewing starting at 7 p.m. And holy karaoke, karaoke at Jersey Sports Bar starting at 7, karaoke at Timeout Bar starting at 8. And if that's just too early for you, karaoke at the Mansion starts at 9. On Thursday, catch Heritage Hour, Anishinaabe Ancestry at Kingston City Hall. This starts at noon. Tom Green's Stompin' Comedy Tour hits Kingston Grand Theater starting at 9 p.m. And it's trivia at Riverhead at 7 p.m. Trivia at the Grad Club at 9 p.m. Trivia at Queen's Pub at 9 p.m. And karaoke at Tiernan Og starting at 9 p.m. as well. On Friday, catch a Miss Emily Christmas at the Isabel Bader Center starting at 7:30 p.m. This is an all-ages event. Moving into the weekend, on Saturday at the Grad Club, it's the Holiday Spice Drag Fundraiser, bringing a sparkle for a great cause. Also on Saturday, it's the Holiday Sociable with East Coast Experience at the Cove Inn starting at 7 p.m. The Kingston Choral Society has their Christmas party at the Spire starting at 7 p.m. and it's karaoke at Tema Bar starting at 9 p.m. On Sunday, it has become an annual community highlight. It's Clem's 9th annual Country Christmas Warm Clothing Roundup at the RCHA. This runs from 1 to 5 p.m. and supports neighbors, local artists, and of course, enjoy the holiday spirit. Stars on Ice comes to the Slush Puppy Place starting at 4 p.m. And as always, the best way to wrap up the week is with karaoke at the Toucan starting at 10:30 p.m. Thank you so much for joining us. That wraps up our events calendar for the week of December 1st to 7th. If you have an event that you'd like to add to our online or on-air events calendar, feel free to reach out today via cfrc.ca or on Instagram at cfrcmusic using the link tree in our bio. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Bad Dawn, a new single by local act Lake Porter. The new song is about facing the impossible and surviving it with the people who never leave your side. It's a story of loyalty and defiance, staring down darkness and choosing love anyway. As faithful as the sun to a new dawn, it's a reminder that no matter how bad it gets, we rise together. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via Visit Kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Bad Dawn by Lake Porter on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
All night, it gets a little brighter. All day, it gets a little dark. I don't want to drink every day, it just feels the same. I pour my last shot right down the drain, and maybe I'll find my sanity. And oh yeah, it's right in front of me. And this time I had it all wrong, but the good days gone and the bad days dawn on me.
I'm way too comfortable living a lie. Swore to myself a thousand times, but who's keeping score?
Tired of the same old playlist? Well, you have two options. Either turn the radio off or turn it up with Power Hour. I'm your host, Disheveled, and we're bringing you the most explosive headbanging rock on the airwaves. From deep cuts from your favorite classic rock bands to the best in up-and-coming rock and roll, we're here to rattle your speakers. Don't miss Power Hour every Thursday night at 7 p.m. here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Welcome to Word Labs Out Loud, your weekly writing spark on CFRC 101.9 FM. During November, as part of our National Novel Writing Month Challenge, we did a broad exploration of themes and practices to help you get out of the gate running with your writing. Through December, I'd like to begin delving a little deeper into these creative elements. So this week, we're going to explore creating a sense of place. Writing convincingly about place is an essential skill for writers in any genre, whether it's fiction, poetry, or creative nonfiction. A common issue that a lot of, especially emerging writers, can have is being too vague or generic in your description of place, or including location as an afterthought. And that can lead to what some people call, quote unquote, talking heads in an empty white room. Basically, characters who might have compelling actions and interactions with each other, but where it feels like it's happening in a void. And when the reader can't tell where a scene is happening, you lose narrative texture and some emotional truth. It's harder for them to imagine that what is happening is real. Writing about place can be tricky. It's a balance of figuring out how to invoke the environment in which your character's experiences are unfolding, or, you know, if you're writing memoir, in which your experiences are unfolding. So how much detail is enough, and what kind of detail matters? How do you give place meaning so that it becomes an integral part of the narrative rather than just a decorative backdrop? And when I talk about place in writing, it can take many forms. It can be a huge scale, like a city or a nation or a world, or it can be intimate. Picture something like a grandmother's kitchen. Obviously, there is the room itself, but there's also what the room evokes. So it's more than just the table and chairs and stove and sink. It's the colors, the smells, you know, something baking. Who's there? Who has been there over the years? How old is this house? And what memories is it evoking? When you start thinking that way, you realize what a significance place has in helping to increase the three-dimensional nature of your story. And yeah, regardless of scale, place carries narrative weight and it deserves thoughtful craft. So to continue this conversation, I'm going to start offering some strategies and then we'll get into some writing prompts for place. Let place develop character. The places you choose, whether real, invented, or somewhere in between, will never be experienced the same way by two different characters. And this is fine. This is great. This adds dimensionality. Use this to your advantage. Filter place through your character's point of view so that descriptions reveal not only the environment, but also the people moving through it. Remember that place is subjective. A hospital room after a clinical emergency is going to be experienced differently by a grieving widow, a young doctor who lost their first patient, and a cleaner preparing the space for someone new. A room at dawn looks and feels different to someone hopeful than it does to someone grieving. Weather, time of day, mood, and memory all color perception, as does the space itself. Character's background influences what they notice as well. A soldier sees different threats or patterns than a primary school teacher. Use these contrasts to reveal backstory and deepen characterization. Engage the senses. Readers understand a place most deeply when they can feel it. This means tapping into those five senses and moving beyond just what you can see. Invite your reader to smell the jasmine in the garden or the reek of garbage during a garbage strike, to hear the croaking of frogs if you're in the country, or the drone of traffic for someone who's walking through a busy downtown. Evoke tastes. You know, maybe someone, they've just eaten a chili that they can't handle and it's the sting of the spice in their nose and on their tongue. Or if you're trekking on a hot day, that humidity sticking to your skin. Use small details like a front door opening, a clock ticking, a radiator hissing to build that depth without overwhelming your story with boring details. Using place as anchor can be another great one. Certain locations like meeting spots, recurring rooms, and familiar landmarks in your story create narrative stability. When a scene returns repeatedly to, say, a favorite cafe, a playground, or a hotel lobby, the reader gradually forms an intimate mental map. It becomes an anchored space. Sometimes it's helpful to personify the setting, to imagine the place as its own character. Think about things like, if your setting had intentions, moods, or desires, what would they be? Humanizing a place can reveal its deeper significance. Going somewhat in hand with that is recognizing that places can be emotional triggers. Places hold emotional charge. They can be soothing, but they can also be frightening. They can disorient a character or transform them. So ask yourself, does this character feel safe in this space, alienated? What memories or associations does this place ignite, and how does that emotional response shape the character's behavior? You can also observe the locals, as they say. As you're moving through a space, who else is in that space? What are they eating? What are they talking about? Where do they gather? If you're trying to remember or explore a real space, but you can't physically get to it, whether it's a place you've been before or somewhere you're trying to learn more about, tools like Google Maps Street View can be really helpful. Zoom in on different neighborhoods, see what kind of businesses are there, what kind of houses, their structure, what are they made of, and also what is the condition of the place? Do the roads look like they're in good repair? Who's walking through that space? If you aren't ready to write a full narrative description, you can absolutely just start with a list, jotting down the things that jump out to you. Cracked sidewalks, peeling paint, the color of a door, the texture of the siding, what the sky looks like, can you see the stars, is it smoggy? And as a final little hint or a final little tip, try to avoid vague cliche descriptors. If you want help on what to avoid, just Google travel writing cliches, you'll get lots of ideas. But things like quaint or off the beaten path or beautiful really aren't evoking very much. So this is where you want to show the readers what those words mean by offering concrete, precise details, that idea of show, don't tell. So now we're going to spend some time with a writing exercise. Credit goes to Alexa T. Dodd, who's an online writing instructor, for this example. So I want you to spend some time thinking of a space or a place that is memorable or meaningful to you. Try to choose a space that you haven't visited recently. So for example, a place from your childhood versus your bedroom this morning. We're going to spend the next 5 minutes describing this place as much as you possibly can using concrete sensory details. So this is describing the physical aspects of the room, but also using those other senses. And we'll come back after 5 minutes.
Stars, for whom it is stars for whom it is preserved.
Using that same space you were writing about a moment ago, spend the next 3 to 5 minutes writing about the emotions you associate with that space. You see 9 to 5. Now that we've thought of concrete sensory details, the emotions that space evokes, I want you to think of a person that you associate with that space. It can be someone who has been in that space with you, or simply someone that that space reminds you of. We'll spend now another 5 minutes, and I want you to describe that person in detail and explain why you associate that person with the space. So that was one sort of interconnected series of writing exercises that help you attack the description of a space from different angles and see how physical description, senses, emotions, and memories come together to develop that three-dimensional sense of space. Another way of exploring and developing your creative writing muscles is something called a stepped exercise, which can help approach increasingly complicated or intimate content by degrees. And so here is something called Journey Inward. We won't have time to do all of these steps today, but it's something that you can carry with you, is spend 3 minutes writing about a public place. After you've spent 3 minutes writing about a public place, spend 4 minutes writing about a place known only to 5 or 6 people. And then finally, spend 5 minutes writing about a place known only to you. Thank you, as always, for tuning into Word Labs Out Loud. I hope you've enjoyed this exploration of place and the development of dimensionality in your writing. And be sure to tune in again next week as we delve deeper into our creative practice.
Toute seule, tu es toute seule. J'aimerais rester ici. J'aimerais voir et toucher. Laisser le film me regarder. J'irai glisser mon doigt dans la cassette magnétique. Allez, prends bobine vidéo au premier titre.
This is Eli on CFRC 101.9 FM. I'm a first-year engineering student at Queen's, and I joined the station in September, so I'm still super new to everything. I love sharing my music and getting to know all the cool people here. We have a funding drive coming up from the start of November to the end of December, so if you want to donate, head